Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the show that's brought to you with Levi Solicitors, who will do you 10% off your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. I'm Dan Moylan. Hello. Michael Normanton's with me.
Hello.
And so is Moscow White. Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
We still have a limited number of copies of our summer special available for sale via our website if you want to get your hands on that. 228 pages, a proper girthy, weighty thing.
I thought you were going to say £228. But that would be, is that the value or the weight?
It's nowhere near that much money. It's £8 plus postage and packing, and you will get a discount if you are a TSB Plus subscriber as well. So have a look at that on our website, thesquareball.net/plus, if you want to sign up for that. Well, we have to start on a somber note with the passing of Terry Cooper, another one of the Reavie greats. And so many have fallen over the last 18 months that it's hard to know even where to begin to start paying tribute to them all and how that's going to work inside Elland Row. But another bona fide legend before our lifetimes, of course, but you're talking about, you know, like our parents' generations would have seen Terry Cooper play and an absolute, just a top draw player.
He was always kind of around our generation, I suppose, in the way that through his son, because Mark Cooper is a manager. Didn't we play against Mark Cooper's team?
We did.
Not so long ago.
I think he was in charge of Kettering when we beat them in the FA Cup just prior to the Scum game.
And then, so Terry Cooper always gets remembered as part of that. And I remember him as a manager in the 90s. But as a player, there's a very simple starting point with Terry Cooper, which is you just say that for 5 years, he was the best left back in the world. And that's Terry Cooper.
And occupying a position that was always seen as troublesome at Leeds, but the two gold standards for left back, Terry Cooper, and then for another generation, it was Tony DiRigo. So, you know, hugely esteemed company, and you have to be in that Reavie side. But for anybody who's not kind of familiar with his record at Leeds, was it 351 appearances he got?
Yeah, and it should have been loads more. That's kind of, there's always a sort of a tinge of regret around a lot of Leeds players of that era. Didn't win all the medals that they should have, didn't win all the cups that they should have. And in Terry Cooper's case, didn't play all the games that he should have. 351 is about half of what Billy Bremner played or Peter Lorimer played. And it was quite simply that when he was pretty much at his peak in 1972, a routine hairline fracture. Nobody thought it was a particularly bad injury at the time, but it went full Adam Forshaw and he was out for 21 months by which time. It's kind of a nice detail, but when Terry Cooper was getting back to fitness, Trevor Cherry was now our left back and was saying, well, he's not having my shirt. I'm not letting Terry Cooper back in. And then Frank Gray was coming through as well, so there wasn't much room for him in our team anymore. So it's a shame how it kind of suddenly stopped when he had so much more to give, and when he was in the middle still of kind of redefining what a left back was and can be, because he was never a particularly good defender. Going backwards, he wasn't the best, but he was essentially a left winger who played better as a left winger starting from left back. They tried him, if you look through the first few years of team sheets when Terry Cooper's first appearing, he's making about 15 appearances a season for three seasons, and sometimes he's wearing three, sometimes he's wearing 11, trying to get Willie Bell out of the left back position and trying to get Albert Johansson out of left wing. And then Eddie Gray took over from Albert and Terry Cooper took over from Willie Bell. And what that gave us was essentially two left wingers who would absolutely go and torture right backs because they knew that behind them at left half was Norman Hunter. So any ball over the top to where Terry Cooper should have been, Norman Hunter was just dealing with that. And it was all about what Cooper and Gray gave to the team going forward, which not many other fullbacks at the time were playing as far forward. And with that style as well, where it wasn't just Paul Reaney got forward a lot, but a lot of the Reavy team always say that Paul Reaney was actually not a very good footballer at all. So say skill-wise and technique-wise, he wasn't there. He'd just bomb forward and cross. Whereas Terry Cooper would bomb forward and he would dribble and he'd cut inside and he would shoot. He didn't score many, but him and Eddie Gray were all about skill on the left side, whereas the right side was Peter Lorimer and Paul Reaney, which was all about Peter Lorimer shooting really hard and Paul Reaney running really fast. So that was what he was bringing from 1967 to 1972 and the Mexico World Cup 1970, when he was one of England's best players. And his white boots and his occasional sort of Che Guevara style mustache. He's quite a character in his way.
Did he come through the ranks at Leeds?
Yeah, he was the interview. There's a good interview that Leeds have put on the official website that was taken from Leeds magazine from 2000, I think. And Eddie Taylor, who has written for the Square Ball a lot, he put his hand to it that he'd written it at the time. And he talks about going for trials at Leeds and playing against Paul Reaney as a left winger against a right back. And that was the first time he'd ever met him. But yeah, it was when that first era of Don Reavy taking over as manager and casting around all of Yorkshire. I think Cooper was playing for some kind of team out Pontefract way, like amateurs, and just went for a trial. And at the end of the game, they offered him a contract and that was at what schoolboy forms, and stayed ever since. But it took him longer to get in because of the presence of, you know, Willie Bell isn't a household name the way that Terry Cooper is, but he couldn't get him out of the team. Just a real solid, experienced left back who got us promoted from Division 2 and was in the team going to the FA Cup final in 65 and those early successes of the Reavy era. And Don Reavy always said he kept having nightmares afterwards because he very nearly sold. If Blackburn Rovers hadn't thought £25,000 was too much, he was going to sell him.
Bit steep, 25 grand. Ooh.
Well, exactly. But that fell through and then Terry managed to get in the team. It's one of those moments where he got really close. And speaking of nightmares, the other thing about Terry Cooper is he scored the winning goal for our first ever proper trophy, the League Cup final against Arsenal. And in the week leading up to that game, he'd been dreaming every night that he was going to score the winner. And there it was.
Bloody
so
hell.
He broke that. And it was just at the point as well when, we'd lost cup finals and European finals. And Europe's sort of most consistent losers was becoming the tag around Leeds. Are they going to win something or are they just going to have to sell all these players and try something else because it's not working with this lot? They're not really good enough. They'll get so far, but they're only ever going to finish second. And then that goal was so important of just kind of lifting the mood, because then soon after that, the First Cup followed and then the Division One title followed. And then the one that they all really wanted, that the FA Cup in 1972, it was just a month before that when he broke his leg at Stoke.
So he missed both cup finals then, 72 and 73.
Yes, and the European Cup Winners' Cup in 73. And he was back fit but didn't get in the team for the European Cup final in 75. And he's a feature of the celebrations when we won the FA Cup, because they brought the cup back to Elland Road and had everybody in there to greet the team. And he's in a wheelchair, in a very natty suit with his leg in plaster and trying to join in that way.
The broken leg, it pretty much ended his career at Leeds, didn't it? I know he did hang around for a bit longer, but it was obviously a mark of the man then that essentially everyone he played with wanted him at their club, because Jack Charlton then took him to Borough, where even though he may have not been at quite the same level because of the injuries, he still managed to play like 100 games for them. And then he went with Norman Hunter, then Billy Bremner picked him up, and he did manage to sort of spin out this career for quite a long time after Leeds, whereas you would almost look at it as being, if it's not going to happen at Leeds, it's almost retirement. But he did still manage through it, just being a good enough technical footballer to keep playing. And I think a broken leg in those days was worse than a broken leg now, wasn't it? It's fair to say. Like, from chatting to Eddie Gray the other week, just talking about his injuries, and he basically played managed to play his full Leeds career on one leg, it seems.
He said he just adjusted the way that he kicked and ran to compensate for the fact that I think it was his thigh muscle that was too short in one leg as a result of the injury and like the scar tissue that built up.
From Cooper going, we got Trevor Cherry, didn't we, and Frank Gray. So you do get to kind of see these new players coming through, but I'm sure it's a regret of his that he never got to play in the cup finals that he should have done.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor Cherry was a brilliant player, and that was the problem. It wasn't that Terry Cooper wasn't good enough when he came back. He'd lost something, because he always said the operation to fix his broken leg went wrong, basically. And it had to be reset, and that's why it was 21 months. I think he may have blamed a surgeon in Manchester for kind of cocking it up. So I don't know if there was a conspiracy involved. But Don Revie, when he got him back into the England team for his final cap when he came back, and was convinced he was playing as good as ever. But Trevor Cherry, despite not being the same type of player, and that's what was different about him, where the kind of the question about what Leeds would have been like if Terry Cooper had played those extra seasons with that style of play. Trevor Cherry was a very different player and ended up being, you know, more of a centre back, and then moving into central midfield, taking over from Billy Bremner. He wasn't bombing down the left wing the way that Terry Cooper was, but England international and an absolutely fantastic player. And then Frank Gray going into that position as well, when that meant Trevor Cherry could then move inside. Scottish international, superb player, won the European Cup with Nottingham Forest. And so there was just two internationals there fighting out for the left-back shirt. Neither of them is going to give, you know, they're not going to be nice and say, tell you what, Terry, you go. And remember, this is before you had, I think you could have one substitute by this time, but it's not a squad game like it is now where they're going to rotate. If you can't get in the first 11, you're just not playing. So the opportunity to go to Middlesbrough, I think it was about £50,000. It was still a big transfer fee for the time, and for a 30-year-old player, which is the other thing as well. In the middle of the 1970s, if you're 30, there is a question mark. Like, well, he's only got a season in him at most, doesn't he? So he had to adapt his style of play. He had to get away from Leeds, because Leeds had moved on in the 21 months. But I think Michael's right that the fact that it was Jack Charlton who signed him, then Norman Hunter, and then Billy Bremner is part of the respect that they had. And in Billy Bremner's book of soccer from 1974, when Terry Cooper is still at Leeds and has got back in, he talks about how when he was first injured, the players used to kind of joke with him, going, oh, come on, sort that leg out, get back in the team. And then as months went by, I think the phrase from Billy is it was... it was awful for us to watch him, but it was torment for him. And the fact that he got back from that after 21 months, and even just to get back to the point where you can win another England cap after that, the players, his tenacity and his grit and his determination to overcome that was something that they respected and appreciated and supported as much as anything that he did on the football pitch. It's a shame, kind of, we're kind of concentrating a little bit on the injury as something that defined him, but that he got over it was incredible. But then those 5 years before it, when he was kind of redefining what a left back could be, I think Rob Badgley wrote years ago about when attacking fullbacks were coming into fashion, like kind of Ashley Cole was the kind of player everybody wanted. So it really all started with Terry Cooper. He was the first one to kind of start playing that way, and everybody that followed was really trying to do the Terry Cooper thing. And nobody did it better. And that's with Leeds. We know that they were the best team that has ever existed in history. That's a given. But I think even with that perspective, you look at some of the individual players and you would say, you know, like Paul Reaney, you'd probably go, well, Brazil had a better right back. And if you were going to put, you know, Mick Jones or Pelé in attack, you'd probably, even Leeds fans would go like, well, Pelé, you might bring something. We love Mick, but maybe Pelé would bring something to the team. Norman Hunter is another example where pretty much everybody except Bobby Moore for England would always have to be above Norman Hunter, because he was just that little bit better. So all the players, as a team, there's nobody better. Individual players, you'd submit to an argument about them as individuals as to whether they were the best in their individual position. But Terry Cooper, there wasn't another left back who you could say, oh, I think he might be better than Terry Cooper. There just wasn't one. So he has that kind of distinction, this inarguable status of just the best left back there was anywhere. And everybody wanted to play like him. Everybody wanted to learn to do what he could do. and he's almost unique in that.
One thought on his appearance as well, it's not related to his footballing ability, which was the absolute gold standard, but looking back through the old photos, you know, he's got that that side parting. How fucking cool did Terry Cooper look in his heyday? He looked like the member of the best rock and roll or indie band that's ever been. Just something about his appearance. You know, I imagine like Billy Bremner, he's kind of got a Dogs of War appearance. He's head to toe caked in mud, his hair's all over the place. Terry Cooper looks like he could easily go pick up a guitar straight after that.
There are some great pictures of that entire side, aren't there? There was one of the pictures I saw doing the rounds on Twitter was, I think it was Terry Cooper's wedding. And you can just see Norman Hunter in the background in a sheepskin jacket. And you okay? Alan Clark was quite fond of a really sharp suit as well, wasn't he? Massive lapels on it and stuff. The whole team just looks great.
Achingly cool, isn't it?
In different ways.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe we're, I don't know, maybe we're too close to the modern team to actually appreciate that how cool Calvin looks in his Balenciaga, but I just don't think he's got quite the same, he doesn't quite have the same kudos as a sheepskin jacket somehow.
And then, of course, after Terry's hair fell out, Norman Hunter didn't know who he was anymore.
I mean, that's a beautiful moment, that video which you tweeted out, actually, didn't you, Michael? And then the club tweeted it as well, just of the little reunion around the centenary. And little did we know at that time just how poignant that would prove to be, given all that we've lost over the last 18 months.
In reflection, it really was well-timed as that thing, wasn't it? I mean, it was literally the last chance that we got to appreciate those number of players in the same room, and them meeting each other was lovely, and the fact that there were so many people there to see it, and we've got those clips. So I think it's the way the last 18 months have gone, I feel like everyone has realised how important it is all of a sudden to do something for these people. What that actually is, I mean, it almost feels like a disrespect to Terry Cooper that we have the same conversation here as we've had with Norman and with Jack and all these people who have done an absolutely crucial part of the club, but what do we do
for them all?
For them all. Yeah, it's the same conversation we've been having since then, I suppose.
And that conversation has become more urgent as we've lost each one in turn, and that sadness kind of, I don't know, it's exponential, isn't it? You start to realise the gravity of what's happened and how many of these legends we've lost, and it feels like a more urgent conversation needs to happen around what we did to commemorate them, but it always does in the wake of losing someone.
Yeah, and I think we sometimes forget in the midst of all the grief that's happening so regularly and horribly that we did do something, and that centenary dinner is exactly it. And it wasn't just the dinner. They got all the players who were alive at the time, and there was thankfully a lot of them together, and gave them all the freedom of the city of Leeds while they were alive to appreciate it and enjoy it. And Norman Hunter, he was one of the people who did the main interviews after being given that honour, and said that he you know, he couldn't believe it, and it meant the world to him. So what we're talking about now in terms of commemoration and memorials and things, I think it's more for our benefit and also for the benefit of future Leeds fans, so that they understand what these players meant, so that somebody, you know, 5 years from now, that there's something at Elland Road that says who Terry Cooper was and what he did. And there are little bits of that around, like the Bremner Square and the Centenary Square do have names, but whether that's enough is a different story. And then naming all the stands at the ground after different players keeps, you know, Norman Hunter's name on the south stand means that it will never be forgotten for as long as that's there. But it is kind of, that part of it is how we remember the players for the future. I think we can't forget and shouldn't forget that the centenary event and the freedom of the city in particular, when all the players got together at the Civic Hall and they were all given this honour and they all, you know, wined and dined and toasted and making speeches and enjoying being back together in each other's company while they're at the city. There is no, it kind of gets underrated because it's not a physical object that we have, and it's not a statue, yeah, it's nothing else, but the city and cities in general don't have anywhere else to go. After you've given somebody the freedom of the city, there is nothing higher that Leeds has as a city to give to anybody, apart from what it already gave to that team. I think it gets left out of the conversation sometimes that they got it, they were there, they enjoyed it. Terry Cooper will have, I don't know if they got like a medal or a certificate or whatever, but it was put in his hand, said, this is a recognition of everything that you achieved. And it was every player from, I think it was 1964 to 1975. They all got it, and they all got it together. So it did happen. So that part of it, I feel quite content in a way that it was well-timed, as Michael said before, this awful run of of horrendous news that seems to keep following one after another is just remember.
They're not forgotten is what we're saying. Yeah.
They're not forgotten, and they weren't forgotten, and they were all reminded that they've never been forgotten in a huge way before this all started happening so quickly and suddenly. And so it's there's two separate things. They have not been ignored. They were not ignored. They did all get the freedom of the city of Leeds, and it's not insignificant. And what we do from now on is more of an us thing.
Although I do wonder if there should be something in the city as well as the obvious stuff that will, I guess, appear at the ground over time and as there's development going on. But just from the point of view of that team putting Leeds as on the world map, I guess, in terms like people travel from Norway who are children because their dad supported it, or their granddad even, it'll be at this stage, supported a team. And it's,
well, it was it. And we, you know, we had a conversation with Ed Cowburn, didn't we, over on the Extra Ball about we were talking initially about the kits, and from that we got into like brand identity, which sounds grubby when you're talking about it in the context of somebody's passing away, but it's relevant in the sense that what Ed brought up was that actually that Reavie team made the city of Leeds famous as much as anything, so they should be part of the identity of the city. And I think what you're saying there, Moscow, about something physical and it being a little bit more for us. Yeah, I mean, if we want to explain and sell Leeds United to this new audience that we're trying to engage and put our finger on exactly what Leeds United's identity is, because I'm not quite sure we've got there yet as a whole thing. I think we know, we kind of feel it and we know, but in terms of selling it to the outside world, I think that team, players like Terry Cooper, need to be front and centre of that.
It's probably almost for the best that it does come after they got the freedom of the city of Leeds, and then everything else is kind of carries on, because there's going to be so many arguments. If you start trying to do a city centre artwork, for example, or a statue or something like that represents all of those players to everybody who wants to remember them, you know, is it going to come out looking like that Ronaldo bust or something? Or if you go for something abstract like that, who's the face who wrote Frankenstein?
Mary Shelley.
Yeah, and wasn't there that awful kind of attempt at a statue to commemorate her, where it's like a tiny little 6-inch model on top of a big plinth? So if you try to do something abstract, everyone's going to go, well, oh, that looks fucking rubbish. And again, the purity of giving them an honour is good in a way, because it's inarguable. It's intangibility. Yeah. Whereas if you start trying to do, I mean, the Trust's mural at Pudsey that has Peter Lorimer and Norman Hunter and Trevor Cherry and Jack Charlton on it, it's done in a particular style that some people don't particularly like, and other people think it looks absolutely wonderful. So you're getting into the realms of taste. Whereas naming the Southland after Norman is given don't forget South Leeds Centre for Sport is the John Charles Centre for Sport, and it feels accurate in a way that a tribute to a player can be the name of a sporting facility, so that everybody who goes in there and uses it, you use that stadium in the name of John Charles. And I don't know if it's about whether, because they're talking about building, but they are going to build a new park on the south bank around Tetley, which is next to where the Salem Chapel is, where Leeds United was founded. Do you call part of that, is that the Don Reavie Park, and you name a place after it, and then you don't worry too much about the statue side of it, and does that bring it into the city some way? And then, but can you get away with, does it have to be the Don Reavie, Gary Sprake, David Harvey, Rini Cooper, mainly?
It's the problem we raised actually about naming the stands, isn't it? It's like, once you've run out of stands, and then we lose more. We had no idea we'd lose so many more so quickly, that you're then left with, okay, perhaps that's what fuels that sense of urgency around wanting to commemorate it. But it's certainly a sad story. And
story is the right word. It kind of to hark back to what Ed Cowburn was saying on the Extra Ball, and about the conversation about, it does interface with branding, unfortunately, but it is about how we tell the story of Leeds United's history and how those things are remembered. And going even further back to, I always bring up Willis Edwards, who played as many games for Leeds United as anybody and was with the club for, I think, 35 years as player, manager, backroom staff. He overlapped from 1924 to 1960 when Don Reavie was a player, when he finally left, and also lived, his mum ran the pub that became the Duchess of York venue, the Robin Hood, and he used to live upstairs. And that's, you can't get much more Leeds than Willis Edwards, even though he was from Chesterfield, which is a very Leeds story, that somebody comes in from outside, like Don Reavie was from Middlesbrough, Marcelo Bielsa's from Argentina, But they represent the city in a better way than somebody from the city might. Billy Bremner as well, as an example, comes from Scotland. His story, you know, he's absolutely nowhere. And, you know, if we were Preston and we hadn't had any success since 1920, whatever, we'd probably have a stand named after Willis Edwards, but it's not there. And where that fits into kind of the points that Ed was making about when you're designing a kit or when you're designing, telling a story around something that's happening at the club, is if you brought back blue and yellow, well, I suppose it would have been blue and white stripes when it was, if you're talking about Willis Edwards to start with, if you're bringing that back as a kit, do you then, you tell the story of Willis Edwards as part of this thing that the club is doing. And it's not, it doesn't mean that you have to put up a statue that's there forever or name a stand after that person or have them there, but you do something at some point that brings that story back and you tell that story, and then maybe the next season you are doing...
Do you remember Willis Edwards when he had the fluorescent stripes, when he wore those that time?
But then you come back and you're doing the blue and gold halves, for example, and you start talking about Eric Stevenson and players like that, who, and John Charles gets brought up again and his history in that kit, and that gets involved in that, and you just spend a year talking about this player or that player or this story or that story. And there's little hints of it with that ham-fisted attempt of the maroon kit was somehow something to do with winning the first cup. But at least that was a nod to say, right, here's the story of how Leeds won the first cup.
Which we have retrofitted to this new kit, which we designed 2 years ago.
I mean, there is always an element of that with some of this stuff where you're bolting together a, you know, we've designed a Leeds kit for a white kit for Leeds United, and here's a story that has really nothing to do with what we did because we have no choice but to make it white, but we'll do all this stuff. But there are different ways of doing these memorials. And what it is less about having, to me at least, I think it's less about having that permanent, always, everybody likes this, everybody agrees, tribute, statue, whatever, but just keeping those stories alive and trying to keep them talked about and keeping them current and passing down the folklore in a way rather than sort of preserving a piece of brass.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Well, we spoke about the forerunner of attacking left-backs. We've got a new one to speak of now. We've had a first look at Junior Firpo as the, well, he's the only big signing so far this summer. Friendlies.
Boo, sign more. Boo.
Friendlies well underway.
He is bigger than I expected as well. He looks quite tall. That might just be my TV.
That link up to create the Bamford goal against Real Betis, I think they pronounce it, don't they, Moscow, was very, very nice and hopefully a glimpse of what we're going to see this year. It was nice to see him in the flesh. I went to Blackburn. So thank you to Ian and to Nath from the Brudenell who sorted me out tickets for that. Much appreciated.
Is he tall in real life? Junior Firpo, I mean, not
I mean, I didn't go stand next to
Nathan's
him.
Nathan's tall.
Yeah, but he looks of a good height. Yeah. That's
because
what I'll say.
You do have the advantage now because you are one of the few, apart from the people who were at the West Brom game at the end of last season, who've seen Rafinha in the flesh, in real life, as a person, not just as a representation of pixels on a screen.
He's not a concept anymore. He's a real, living, breathing human. That was exciting. Yeah.
How was it then in the stadium? Were people keeping their distance? Were they? Masks on?
I mean, well, We got our tickets 5 minutes. We got into the ground 5 minutes after kickoff because Blackburn didn't send a load of tickets out in time. They didn't arrive. So the people that I was getting them from were collecting at the away ticket end, which is right next to the away end at Blackburn. It's part of the stand. So it was a bit of a dash up. And I took my lad, who, if you've been a listener to the podcast in recent times,
had Spurs a, fans getting tickets. He
had,
sickening.
He had a little flirtation around Spurs because he thought Harry Kane was cool. We now know Harry Kane is not cool. Particularly, he's not turned up for Tottenham training this morning, has he? He's just not showed up.
That's cool. I think that's the coolest thing Harry Kane's ever done.
It's the most rebellious thing he's done in his life. But I'm pleased to say that Sam is now very much dyed in the wool Leeds United, refers to Leeds United as we. You know, he's getting training kit and the Chelsea away kit for his birthday, which is next week. So we've got him. He's one of us now.
I hope he's not listening to this. I'll ruin the surprise.
Nah, he doesn't listen to podcasts. He's only turning 10. He'd be all right.
So you're just getting disinformation on YouTube at that age, I suppose.
The point is, he's only a slight lad, and we had to fight our way in to get to the seats. Now, our seats, as it transpired, were on the back row of the Blackburn.
It's an away game. You don't have seats. Just go wherever.
Well, yeah, so we got about three quarters of the way up towards the back. The aisles were full, so I just plonked him, stood him on a seat next to me, and I stood in the aisle for 90 minutes.
That's good enough. That's
a fire hazard.
Yeah, yes, very much so. But no, it was a good view, and he could see all right, and he enjoyed it. He very much enjoyed the swearing, which is, I think, one of those things that captivates you as a kid, doesn't it? But no, it was just nice to be in a football ground, and there were a couple of moments early doors when I felt quite emotional just at the concept of being there, and just some nice little touches. Like, there was a lad who was crowd surfing at one point, and the stewards, I think, were going to wade in and remove him, but then thought better of it because they realised they weren't going to get through all the Leeds fans all the way up to the top of the stand. I don't know, just all of it, the experience, it was just really nice to be back. And yeah, like, you know, when it comes around to commemorating the players that we've lost, and but being back in Elland Road, because that's our home, it is going to be a moment. I know that.
It was a slightly strange experience watching the Blackburn game because it sounded really good, but mainly you could just see empty seats because there were, I think there were more Leeds fans than Blackburn fans.
Yeah,
there
were, yeah.
In total. But and the Leeds fans were obviously all squished into one end, whereas the Blackburn fans were spread around about 25,000 seats. So you couldn't really see or hear them for the majority of the game, but you could. You just always knew there was this big presence of Leeds fans at one end. So it was nice.
Strange.
It came across loudly on Live Now.
Live Now.
Live Now, Live Now.
Live Now, Live. I can never remember which way the count rules are. Yeah, I got the feeling or the impression that quite a lot of Blackburn fans had looked at that game and gone, don't fancy that. We'll let Leeds have that one. Stay home.
Yeah, that journey to the away game, finding somewhere to park, slightly unfamiliar territory, remembering what it looked like last time you were there, just all that, all those little behavioural things that are exciting about an away game, you know, going past pubs and seeing the coppers outside and Leeds fans taking over the pub just at the bottom of, I think it's Jack Walk Away, where we parked the car, housing estate, and walked down past the pub and it was just full of Leeds fans, just things like that, those sights and sounds we've missed.
It's what we've all missed during coronavirus, isn't it? Blackburn.
Well, the good news is I did take a disease test this morning and disease free, so it wasn't the super spreader event maybe we feared, or certainly not in my case. I know I'm only one of 5,000, but all clear on this front, which is great. But on the football front, it was nice just to see Leeds do the Leedsy patterns, because I think what you lose when you're watching on TV is that sense of the whole pitch that you get when you're inside a stadium and you can see the movements, and you know, it's almost like ballet, isn't it, the way that Bielsa gets his team to play. And even though there were moments when it was a bit under par, you remind yourself it's a pre-season friendly. What's important is that they're looking for the right passes and they haven't forgotten how to play football.
No Bamford or Phillips either. I think that made a fairly major difference in this one.
Costa as centre forward.
I don't want to see that again, to be perfectly honest. Didn't work, did it?
No.
I feel like we have the same conversation about Costa for 3 years. This is his third year, isn't it?
Just waiting for him to kick on.
Yeah, we're coming into our third year of having the same conversation about Helder Costa. We're like, well, could he just be a bit better? Do you think he could be a bit better somewhere? It didn't work, did it? I mean, it isn't his position, so fair enough. It was good to see new signing Jackie Harrison look good, though.
Yes.
Thought he was excellent.
Yeah, he did. And pillow feet.
Yeah.
Pillow feet. And there was that, let's not forget that that slide tackle that the, is he now knackered, Diego Llorente, did. Was it Armstrong, I think, who burst through inside the area on the left-hand side as they look at it, and he was about to ping off a shot, and Llorente had anticipated and did that brilliant slide tackle, which looked great in the flesh, I have to say.
I mean, we played all right, didn't we, overall? We deserved to probably win. I mean, I don't think they would have scored had it not been for that ridiculous free kick.
At no time did we look under serious threat or pressure. It was just, we controlled it without ever really getting out of second or third gear, I thought. You can tell it's a training exercise.
Yeah, I mean, their goal, I think there's only one angle of it, so you couldn't properly tell, or maybe two, but from the same side of the pitch. I don't think you could fully tell how deflected that was, but...
Yeah, I mean, I was right in line with it, and it was one of those where your eyes start going one way, then suddenly have to jolt the other to the other side of the net. It was really massively deflected, yeah.
I mean, the guy celebrated it like he just scored he was like Tardelli in the World Cup, wasn't he? But ran off like greatest day of his life.
Their fans did. That's the first time we heard them.
And seemed a little bit odd.
They tried a little sing-song after that and got like, woo, Leeds fans doing that. So that was all good fun, just that pantomime stuff.
Whereas our goal was a crisp and true finish, which absolutely didn't deflect into the goal.
It was very good, I thought. Just great to see him. I thought Firpo looked, he's got the right ideas, obviously. He looked a little bit rusty because he's not completely au fait with the system yet, and he's getting to know his new teammates, but he's certainly attacking, and I look forward to him linking up with Jackie on the left. I think that could be a real threat this year, so we'll see how that pans out. And did you watch the Betis game, Moscow?
Yes, I did, yeah. What would you like me to say about it?
I'd like you to tell me what you thought of that man kicking Pascal Strauch.
Oh, it's bloody awful. I went and actually looked into his background trying to find out if he makes a habit of this.
Trying to find out his address.
Kind of thing. He was sent off, I think it was last season, against Bilbao. So I don't know if it's just against teams that Bielsa has something to do with. It brings out the rage in him. But I think it was only after about 4 minutes. It's a horrible kind of over-the-top potential shin snapper that he gets a straight red for. But beyond that, I couldn't find much kind of evidence of him being a serial kicker. It must just have been Pascal Strauch. He kind of kicked Strauch back into childhood in a way, because when Strauch had kind of recovered and got up before he ended up going off again, you did see him kind of look around for the guy who kicked him, and he looked at him and just went, "What'd you do that for?" It was like a real, just like, there was no trace of these are professional athletes competing. It was just...
It was a proper, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, it was just a real playground thing. Like, "What'd you kick me for? What are we playing?"
I remember playing school football for my school in Bradford, and we played against Buttershaw, which, if you're familiar with the film Rita Sue and Bob 2, I think it was filmed bits at that school, which was quite an eye-opener when you're playing on the same school field that they were messing about on. And there was a kid who was playing centre-half, and I know it's hard to believe, but I was a hotshot striker back at school there in the number 9 shirt.
Who would you liken yourself to?
Sort of cross between, I think, Patrick Bamford, probably a little bit more clinical, and these days Mark Viduka. But I was all right. I was a decent footballer back then. I think I finished top scorer in Bradford that year. We won the league, which was all right. Yeah. I know.
All right, we'll do a spin-off podcast about your football career if we must.
The match ball.
Sounds like we're doing it. What was your point?
Match ball 40. No, I was going to say I was marked by a centre-back who, he started the game just, I mean, not even pretending, but just booting me as I ran. Like, so I'd run, kick. And I said to him, "What the fuck are you doing?"
"I'm kicking you, mate."
Yeah, and that's basically what he said. "So I'm kicking you."
"What does it fucking look like?"
But the nice payoff for that is that within about 3 minutes, I'd scored a goal. First of five that we put past him, and he'd been sent off for telling his teacher, who was the referee, to fuck off.
Needless to say, I had the last one.
We did as well. Yeah, so did we learn anything from these friendlies? Did we learn anything from Betis losing 3-2?
There's an argument, and I felt it, as the Helder Costa argument sort of took hold again, I did kind of think, could we not just play these behind closed doors so nobody has to go, because, you know...
And without cameras.
Without cameras, nobody has to know anything about these games apart from just print the score in the paper and move on. Even
would you put it on teletext?
Maybe even not print the score anywhere, because it's so uneven, where you've got players at different levels of fitness, players coming back from different tournaments, have had different breaks or under different loads, have done different training. Our opponents have played a different number of games, so they're at a different stage, and everything's kind of, there's nothing really even about it. And we know from Bielsa's pre-seasons up to now that were never great. Remember, we got spanked 4-0 by scum on the other side of the world for no reason, didn't we? And then didn't Forrest Green rattling goals past Bailey Peacock Farrell as if he wasn't there starting that particular trend. And then we go into the season and we're absolutely fine. And it's difficult to make the link between pre-season friendlies and first game of the season. And I can never remember, when I think back to, I used to go to quite a lot of pre-season friendlies because it was easier to convince my dad to take me to a pre-season friendly than it was to a league game, because it was cheaper, it'll be quieter and all this kind of stuff. And they're always fucking rubbish. So I always have that in the back of my mind when I'm looking at Helder Costa and thinking, why can't you kick the ball straight? Or why can't you just pass to a lead shirt? Kind of one thing. But then the other side of it is that Jamie Shackleton is suddenly the breakout star of July 2021. Looks like he's going to be our best player for the entire season. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't play a game all season because it's fucking Marcelo Bielsa or watch that thing. Very, very good, Shackleton, very good. Sit down. So you can't necessarily tell, and it is all about getting fitness. And then, you know, if you looked at Meslier going full Van der Heuvel against in one game, like two terrible goalkeeping errors in not even the space of 24 hours. It was only about 14 hours between them, wasn't there? We know Meslier is a much better keeper than that, but you know, do you
shaking off the rust, isn't
do
it?
Do you turn off? Do you turn off that match thinking, well, is this Chris Klass going to be there? Is he going to be good enough, or do we need to go back and cancel that loan for Kiko and sort that out? Whereas, you know, realistically, we know it will be fine. So,
what it tends to do, though, you're right, Moscow. It tends to fuel anxiety around transfers. Yeah. That's all it does because the window's open for another month or whatever, and everyone's going, "Well, we're awful. You've got to go and buy X, Y, and Z."
Even Click's goal against them was, you know, it was a through ball from them. So I don't know what we necessarily learn from that. So it was a good example of the opening goal with Harrison and Dallas and Firpo crossing for all of them crossing for Bambo. That was nice. And there's good bits, but yeah, they're probably working harder and playing better in murder ball than they are in these games that we're having to pay money to watch.
I will say Click has looked good. I think he's possibly been our best player across these two games. So that's good, because I know we were a bit concerned about him at points last season that he looked to have, to say he'd gone would be a stretch, but he didn't look like the old Clicky, did he? Whereas now he does just look back to normal, and also like Jamie Shackleton could play midfield. The Calvin thing is still a bit of a concern. I don't think Cock did better there against Blackburn. Against Betis, he did look at points a little bit lost. He doesn't seem to quite hold his position in the same way as Calvin does. Like Calvin will chase to a point and then he'll almost reset, and he seems to keep the shape better.
You could argue maybe it's to do with his centre back leanings, like your program to go close the ball down and make a tackle or whatever.
Engage a bit sooner.
Yeah, whereas you could argue Calvin's is perhaps a little bit more about positional sense. But we're talking about football now, and that's terrifying, so let's move on quickly.
And also, I mean, it is also pre-season, and this is I know he has played in this position before, but he's not played there for most of his career, has he? So he's still learning the position and learning what Bielsa asks of him. And, you know, maybe he was playing quite far up the field and doing that because Bielsa had told him to at half time. So maybe he was completely accurately following instructions. Who knows?
There was something very surreal about seeing two of the statesmen of the game, the elder statesmen in Bielsa and Pellegrini, just pissing around at a university sports ground.
Pellegrini sticking with his lockdown hair, isn't he? He's getting bigger and wilder by the day.
We still don't even know where we're going to play Villarreal yet.
Secret, isn't it?
But yeah. what we do know is that's how the value is extracted from your live now pre-season.
Yeah, last week I was getting it completely wrong, because I'd forgotten that the Ajax game was already included in it. And the question was, would they then throw in another one? And to be fair, they have. I suppose five pre-season friendlies for, what is it, $12.99 isn't a bad deal, even if it's more expensive than they initially announced, and when they're advertising it as a series of friendlies against Europe's elite, and the most expensive of them all is the Blackburn game at $4.99, and then Ajax and Villarreal, I think, about $3.99. It's like, how can they be cheap? I don't know if it was down to Blackburn said that they had to get, you know, we charge at $5 for a game, because they were also directing people to line out all the fucking... And why they like
just exasperation.
The only two games that are the same price, as far as I can tell, are Ajax and Villarreal. But the rest of them, it's $4.99, $1.99, $2.99, $3.99 across, and then another $3.99. Well, just charge the same price for fucking all of them and make it simple. Who puts that? I don't know.
Making
a simple thing slightly more complicated than it needed to be.
There will be reasons, Moscow. There will be reasons.
Has there been much on LUTV this past week? I've not been checking in.
Yeah.
All those nice the perks of membership. You get a free pass for nothing.
You do get the full 90 in theory. So you can go, if you didn't watch live on Live Now, then who did we play? Blackburn and what's the other one?
Geisley?
No. Yes. Yeah, the Geisley.
Fleetwood.
I think the Geisley 490, but then was Fleetwood Friday night? Yes. I totally lost track of where we are. Yeah, Fleetwood and Diabetes at time of speaking have not shown up on there as yet, but technically you can pay £1 a week and get the full... oh, no, there we go. Right, full. There's a full match replay now for Leeds against Real Betis. So if you didn't watch it live and you want to watch it, it is on LUTV, so there is a point to it.
Good.
In that sense, it's like a cheapo option.
With reference to Fleetwood, we never got the grace and surprise that was hinted at,
did we?
They
were going to win, probably.
Oh, was it the dive that they got for the penalty or whatever?
I did hear that the only thing that was different is that they'd agreed to not make substitutions for the last half hour.
All right.
Which is kind of...
Something we've never seen in football before.
I guess it was just maybe a stipulation of don't make the game daft, because it sometimes gets that way in friendlies, doesn't it? When people will change like 8 players at the hour mark or whatever. It was like they obviously wanted to have a play against a set side for some of that.
Wow, thrilling.
But yeah, it wasn't exactly...
I don't know. I was hoping for some sort of really novelty aspect. Like you said before, like somebody parachuting in or... I don't know, a police dog display.
Put them all on segways.
Yeah, something like that. Some magic in those giant balloons, what they call those bubbles that
I know what you mean.
Like a hamster. Could have all been doing that. And then that's a way to avoid injury, isn't it, in pre-season?
If only Cresswell had one round his head, he would be okay now, wouldn't it? Yeah, we didn't touch upon the fact that all of our defenders are forever injured. Cooper was injured at the start of this, presumably, because we've not seen him yet.
Yeah.
He played golf.
He did play golf.
Yeah, he looked all right on the golf
course. So did Adam Falshaw, though.
I mean, it feels like a different skill set to the one that we need. Sport,
you need to be able to stand up.
Michael, you play a bit of golf.
Do I look in a fit state to play 90 minutes for Leeds United?
No. I mean, that would be
cruel. Well, there you go, then.
I don't want to be cruel.
No. I mean, I would struggle with 90 seconds, I would think, intensity.
You've been busy recently, haven't you? You must have been watching the Olympics as well with your coach's eye, thinking how you could put some tips out there for the Olympians to pick up on. Maybe like... 100 metre dash, whatever it's called, what would you say to them?
Just run as fast as you can.
Yep.
In a straight line as well is important, because you've got to stay in your lane. Okay. Someone did, Jerry, he did tag me into a Twitter post of an Irish boxer saying he hit him as hard as he could or something like that, which is great advice, I think, for boxers. Too many boxers, you see him not really smacking him.
Yeah.
And I think
footwork this, footwork that. No, just rubbish.
Just hit him really hard and right in the face. Yeah. That's where I'd do it as well.
What would be your approach to the high jump, for example?
Springy legs. Get your legs as springy as you can.
Are you trying to get, is it over the bar that you're aiming for? Is that what you'd suggest?
Football under the bar. High jump over the bar.
Yeah, and you've got to make sure you get your legs over it too. There's no point just getting your head over, because the rest of your body will send it clattering right down, and then that's not allowed. You can't argue the toss on that one.
It's a similar skill set, isn't it, with pole vault on? You've got a stick.
Yeah, yeah. Usually you get higher with your stick.
Have you got any recommendations on stick?
I've not seen any of the stick jump yet. Is it been on?
Yeah, I mean, you see a man or a woman or whoever's doing it running along with a big stick, and they shove it in a hole in the ground, and they springs them up, and then they try and get over it, much like, as Moscow said, that the high jump. So if you've got a recommendation around sticks, that was my particular thing I was looking at.
A long and springy.
Yeah.
That's what I'd look for in a stick. You can find, part of the joy of being a kid is like going to some woods and finding a good stick, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I'd probably just head out to like Addle Woods or something, maybe, if you're in Leeds. I don't know where you find a local wood.
Has it got a strong stick game in Addle, do you think?
I'd say so, probably, yeah. You have a good rummage round. You need to make sure they're not sort of half rotten and everything, but yeah, get yourself a good stick and just give it a try. That's what I'd say to all the kids out there. Just get yourself a stick and have a go. Jump over, you can go over walls, cars, anything you want.
Mm-hmm. Isn't there there's like a mountain biking course or a BMX course at Middleton Woods now, isn't there? So they can see if you can
see Angus Kinnear down there.
Yes. Doing a forward roll on his BMX, over his head.
If you've been following us on socials, we are due to speak to Angus in about another week's time, so in the week leading up to the season.
Can give me some cycling tips,
He did say when we arranged it that he needed somewhere to park his bike, so he can maybe use the half pipe that we've got in the office.
Is Angus, we need to ask him about this, is he looking quite buff? I noticed he was spotted in the away end at Blackburn, and he was doing a lead salute, and he had quite a lot of bicep on show. I was kind of having a little swoon over him.
We clocked each other at half time,
oh,
and he waved at me,
oh,
which I don't know. I felt
pathetic.
I felt like I'd given away some sort of secret. I don't know. I was going to do the Alioski love heart and tongue out, but you know, didn't.
This is Gianni Alioski That's what he says, isn't it, in all his videos? My favourite part of all his videos is the part where he goes, it's me, Gianni Alioski.
He's got referring to himself in the third person.
We've let him go at just the wrong time, I feel. He's just hitting his stride. Gianni Cam never got to this point where he was actually turning to camera. And it would have been great if he was doing all his antics, if he's, you know, doing his dolphin noises and all this, and then he just suddenly stops that, turns to camera and goes, hello.
Breaks the fourth wall.
It's Gianni Alioski here.
he's gone Barry Scott, is what he's done. Introduce every video.
I know people will have been upset at the prospect of him speaking to that team in Turkey, and we've obviously now aware that he hasn't gone there. At least now we can bookend his time at Leeds and say that is that, and just put it to bed because he did us the video. I mean, it had the potential to go horribly wrong compared to the way that it did end, but I think are we all generally in agreement that it's good that we can just say goodbye and that's that?
And it was a nice video, wasn't it? It seemed, I've no reason to believe it wasn't heartfelt. And he's got a face that's kind of hard to dislike, isn't it? Because he's just, he's not a serious person, is he somehow, Alioski? Even though he's being sincere in it, there was just still a bit of me going, go on, do something. Yeah. Go on. You know, I was expecting it to pan out and he'd have no pants on or something just because of japes. But yeah, it's probably the last we'll see of him for a while, because I'll be honest, I don't intend to watch an awful lot of the Saudi League. I'll watch as much as I always have, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, and whatever his conversations with the other club or what his agent dealt with them, whatever came out of it, if it pushed his wages up, if it meant they had to pay Patrick Van Aanholt more and then we'll end up going bust as a result of it, all to the good. And if it meant he got more negotiating in with Ali, all the better as well. You know, it's how it turns out is the thing to look at, and how it turns out is with an incredibly cringeworthy welcome video where he has to wish the chairman of the club a happy birthday before announcing that it's signing. And I think that's the great part, is he went through all the happy birthday stuff. It's like, obviously it is a great day for the president of the club. I wish to join him. And then he got to introducing himself, because it's me, Gianni Alioski, and I am coming to very happy to sign on this great day. And that was the real great moment of that.
Well, just by coincidence, I'd like to point out that in another month's time, it is Andrea Ratrizzani's birthday. He'll be turning 47.
Is that when we finally announce our second big signing of the summer? So we'll save it for then, so that they could be wishing him a happy birthday.
I just want to go on record now and be the first to say happy birthday, Mr. Chairman, or whatever it was that Ben Fry used to do. We have a new occupant for the number 13 shirt, which again feels like for the best. Kiko Casilla has gone to Elche, as we know. He has done an interview saying there won't be a return to Leeds, which feels like, again, for the best. The Norwegian Bailey Peacock Farrell has signed, hasn't he, Moscow?
He looks fine.
He does, doesn't he? And, yeah. You know, for as much as he's, we are joking, of course, don't damage the poor kid's self-esteem at this stage, but he looked a little bit spooked, didn't he, when he was playing his final games for Vålerenga, probably because of the interest around this and being unsettled and all the rest of it. And he's not the finished article yet, ask anybody in the game kind of thing around Norway and the same, but he's going to be brilliant. And he doesn't get, you know, a call up to the senior team for good reason.
No, he's played something ridiculous, like 50-odd games for the youth teams. And I've not broken down which ones they all were, but it seemed like a lot. And they also did, he had a farewell video at Vålerenga, which, unlike any farewell video I think I've ever seen, because it starts with him in the changing rooms in front of the squad, and it looks like somebody's leaving a job. He's quite close to saying, you know, and on the table over there, I brought in some buns for everybody, and 4 o'clock, and then he kind of wink at the boss. He got, well, maybe 3:30, maybe a little bit early, but I'll be in the pub over the road after, and we'll all have a drink, and who knows where we're going to end up tonight. It had that kind of vibe, but obviously it's all in Norwegian, and I didn't understand any of it, apart from, I'm not sure if it's the team manager or a goalkeeper coach or a youth coach who's kind of standing next to him, who is the person that's saying, like, well, obviously Christopher's been with the company for a long time. He was brilliant with the accounts that he's kept running. He's really, and also who is going to change the toner in the printer now? How will we get by without him? But then he says, he obviously talks about where he's going. It's in Norwegian. And then he says, and there's a pause, and he goes, Leeds United. And there's always like the rest of the players are kind of like, oh, wow, I didn't know. Did you know he was going to Leeds? Wow, that's a really good move. So it's that's quite sweet. And then
sounds well acted.
And then he puts him through a little bit of last kind of bit of goalkeeper training, does a bit of kicks the ball at him a few times. And then they just sit down in the goal mouth and have a chat. And the guy, whoever he is, this manager fellow, is going on. It's almost as if he's giving him all the life advice he needs for his future life and career. It's quite touching.
I am pleased we've got a Norwegian playing for the club. It feels like we should always have a Norwegian footballer on the books at Leeds.
Like Irish. We're still lacking the Irish contingent, aren't we? But we've got a Norwegian to take up the slack.
Did you like having Tor Endre Flo at the club?
Yes. And Frank Strandley. And Gunnar Halle, all of them.
And Tommy Narvik.
Great bunch of lads.
Let's not forget him.
This guy, he'll do until Erling Haaland's ready, won't he?
I mean, he's been wearing our shorts, hasn't he?
Tor Endre Flo, of course, did play for Vålerenga at some point, didn't he? Yes, he did. I've just checked his Wikipedia. Along with Moscow, this is one for you. Henning Berg and Ronnie Jonsson. Those two fine lads as well. So good pedigree there. It does feel slightly concerning just having children as goalkeepers, doesn't it? But I think we've seen Melier's temperament that he doesn't seem young in his head, does he? Because that's what people think about
the Iceman,
about older goalkeepers, is that they've got the experience and they can move on from mistakes and stuff. Whereas I think Melier's fine. As long as he doesn't get injured, I'm not concerned at all.
I don't really know the roots of that move to elder goalkeepers being better and having to wait their turn, whether it is something that is about experience and you want to give them that training, or if it's just that people were so risk averse that if they had a good goalkeeper, they'd do everything to keep them. So there's not a chance for a 19-year-old goalkeeper to get a start somewhere. You know, opportunities are limited. If you have who's a good goalkeeper,
Nigel Martin.
Yes. Well, I mean, back in the day, we gave him up for Paul Robinson. It turned out to be a huge mistake. But I was thinking more up to date. If you have Hugo Lloris, he's quite good, isn't he? If you're Spurs, you're going to do everything you can to keep him, because if Harry Kane's not fucking turning up, then you need to try and hold on to your good goalkeeper. There's not really the opportunity there for an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old in Chris Klass's case to usurp him. So they all did just end up going out on loan, and then lower down the divisions, if you're Leighton Orient and you're offered Tottenham's 20-year-old goalkeeper on loan, of course, because they're going to be better than you can find anywhere else. So it just becomes, the effect is that young goalkeepers learn their trade at a lower level for longer because people don't want to give up on a good thing.
It's a niche market, isn't it? It really is a niche market.
But I don't know if it then necessarily follows. It's kind of been retrofitted that the reason for that is, you need the goalkeepers don't become any good until they're 27. But maybe that's just been bolted on, and actually the future is goalkeepers, the younger the better, and we'll have a 15-year-old in goal before too long.
I mean, the other thing big clubs tend to do is, as Arsenal did with Martinez, they have these people on the books for years. They loan them out, and then they eventually let go of the good goalkeeper who they could have just kept in the first place, because they were like, he's not quite the first choice. And then eventually he reaches the point where he becomes better than everyone that they already have.
Have they signed what's his face for 30 million Arsenal keeper? What's his name?
Ben White.
No,
it's the only signing I know.
Is it Ramsdale I'm thinking of? They were talking about.
Oh, yeah, from Sheffield United,
For 30 million quid. Like, what?
Yeah, it does make him.
Keep Martinez. He was 20 million and you already had him.
I mean, Arsenal's.
Poor Ben.
Fucking
poor Ben.
Yeah, their transfer policy and just general policy in terms of existence. I do feel sorry for Ben White and just sorry about the whole thing and bad about how that's all going to turn out, because I don't foresee a happy ending. Ben will be fine, but you know, it's just going to have a lot of fucking idiots shouting at him for 3 years and then have to leave.
Let's just rattle through some of the other movements that have happened. Leif Davis has gone to Bournemouth on loan with the option of a permanent deal. That feels like he's done at Leeds then, probably.
It seems so. You don't offer a chance for them to buy him if you think he's coming back, do you? It does seem slightly odd that he's been around the first team for so long, and then as we're getting rid of left backs, because Huggins is going, isn't he, as well, and we saw McCarron playing there for the under-23s the other night, and it doesn't feel like there's an obvious line of backups there, and yet we're willing to let him go. So
again, the kid from Celtic, is that an option? Is he a left back?
Possibly.
One of them?
Yeah, I can only assume that they're lining up somebody that they like long-term better than Leif Davis, but for now, how old's Junior Firpo? I assume from his name...
25,
isn't he? He's a baby. So Junior's 25, so he's got, 10 years of service for Leeds. left. Stuart Dallas is going to play until he's 50. So we're not bereft there. So there is time to maybe think, well, if Leaf ain't going to be the one, and it doesn't seem, I mean, Bournemouth is actually a good move because they could get Scotty Parker's gone there, aren't they?
So not such a good move.
Not such a good move. But I suppose taking anti-blazer, what's it? It's a, is it a blacket? I forget now, or a jazer?
Oh, the Blardigan.
The Blardigan. Taking all Blardigan bias out of it, there's not, it's not unreasonable to think that Scotty Parker could get Bournemouth back into the Premier League with Leif Davis as their left back. So he's obviously decent, just it seems like he's got to that point where he's not quite good enough for us, but good enough to be playing for somebody. So he may as well go and play for Bournemouth, and we'll
always have very good Davis, won't we?
I mean, so much of his reputation has just been built on the fact that there was a pitch side microphone during a pre-season friendly, just happened to catch that one moment, and then that's been Leif Davis since. But he has looked decent when he's whenever I've seen him play, and he's won, if we're ignoring Alioski in Al Ahly, which I've got a notification on my phone to see what he's up to. I'm still interested. It'll be interesting to see how Leif gets on, see whether he rustles his way into in the autumn breeze, or if he turns mouldy and drops off.
Thanks for the analogy.
Mulch by winter.
Let's talk about Conor Gallagher quickly. That's
never happened. Heard of him.
Gone to Palace.
Dead to me.
Shoot the Chelsea scum, I think is what we want to say about that, don't we? Are you disappointed that he's not coming? Have we had an explanation about why he's not coming?
Well, from Danny Mills we have, and he knows, doesn't he?
Well, he's got blistering insight into football as Danny Mills. First of all, he must be speaking to some sort of high rollers if he's giving his opinion on this matter.
Was it the New York Times he was speaking to, or was it? It was Football Insider. Oh. Football Insider. Yeah, he thinks that he's going to play in that Rafinha Rodrigo role. Jack Harrison's in there. Calvin Phillips is in there. That midfield area for Leeds is not done and dusted, but harder to break into than under a new manager and a new direction at Palace. So maybe he's had assurances there.
He might have had more assurances, and Bielsa might not promise that.
What he's done is he's listed a lot of players who don't play in the same position as Gallagher in saying that Rafinha and Rodrigo and Jack Harrison and Calvin Phillips, he probably wouldn't actually play any of those positions.
He's absolutely not mentioned the one player that he might replace, or the two. He would be the Click or Dallas,
yes,
role, wouldn't it? And he's just not mentioned them. I don't think there's anybody.
Well, why is that?
He's going to play
on the wing. Why has he not mentioned it? What do you think?
Because he does not have a fucking clue what he is talking about. We've got other Football Insider news as well, haven't we? From I was going to mention this around the under-23s friendlies, but Lewis Bates, this will be good news for him. Gabby Bonlahor has been speaking to Football Insider. And
what does the Football Oracle have to say?
He thinks that he 100% has a chance of playing this year,
mm-hmm,
which is very definite.
Bloody hell, Gabby. I mean, you've got to be careful tying yourself to these hard-hitting opinions.
Says, just keep, he's from here, isn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Just keep performing in the under-23s games. There is definitely the time for young players to be given a chance in football. Year by year, it's getting more fashionable for young players to get a chance. It's a good time to be a young player and you'll get your chance.
It's getting more fashionable for young players to have a chance. So, as you said, Moscow, presumably we'll be playing a bunch of kids, won't we? Like the under-15s will be turning out in another few years.
I'm going to say this. I mean, this is a guess, but I don't think Gabby Bonlahor has even once watched Bate play. I bet he's not seen a single minute of him, not even on YouTube.
Mm.
And he's been asked about him here. And I don't know why.
I mean, it's amazing. It's such an empty thing.
It's a vacuum, isn't it?
Say, does the player that this club have just signed
have a chance of playing
for them? Yes. 100% yes.
100% chance.
Yeah, 100% he does have a chance of playing for them. Like, the value, thank you everybody for bringing me this. I never would have arrived.
It's hashtag content, isn't it? What about Lewis O'Brien? Bielsa was at Huddersfield versus Sheffield Wednesday. I don't know if he was there to laugh or to scout or what, but that one won't go away, will it? Young central midfielder who originally
presented the Crystal Maze.
Yes, felt kind of underwhelming as a midfield option, but the more you think about it, does it make more sense to you?
I mean, if he's, is he going to 100% have a chance of playing? Because Lewis Bate has got that guarantee.
Yeah.
Lewis O'Brien, what's he at? Is he an 80% chance of playing? 85?
Well, no, it's not the chance of playing. It's the chance of having a chance of playing.
So yeah, we'll have to do the maths on it, see
what that works out.
See what that works out to, whether it's worth signing him or not. I mean, right. We're going to have to pay about 10 million quid for him. So it's,
you think?
Which seems
lot. That's what they're asking for.
Nah, Huddersfield are pathetic. They're not getting 10 million from us.
How much did they sell Jordan Rhodes for back in the day?
I think they got about 7 million quid for him, something like that.
They can't be expecting.
He's back there, isn't he, as well?
Yeah. Tom Lees has just gone there as well.
Christ, he has, hasn't he? Poor lad. I quite enjoy Tom Lees's career, though. He feels very old school in just a man just refusing to move house. Just going like, probably an offer from Chesterfield or something. He was like, too far. I'm willing to stay in West Yorkshire, if possible.
£8 million, Jordan Rhodes from Huddersfield to Blackburn Rovers. They're not going to have our pants down like that. And I think that's kind of the upper limit. It's the Huddersfield thing. Lewis O'Brien could be the next Patrick Vieira, Calvin Phillips, Matches Click combined. But I'm not giving Huddersfield Town £10 million for fucking anybody. That's just not right. A million.
They'll get what they're given.
Yeah, it is. That is exactly
it. And you'll like it.
It feels like £1 million signing. If Louis Bates has come from Chelsea, what we paid for him, like £1.5 million rising to something. We can't be giving 10 times that amount of money to Huddersfield Town for a midfielder than we've given to Chelsea for a midfielder. You can't tell me. Who's in? Is it fucking Lee Bromby, I believe, is their
director of football. What does he know?
I don't like. I like Lee Bromby. I love his long throws. You can't tell me, though, that he has managed to produce a £10 million midfielder in the Huddersfield Town Academy. Because if Lewis O'Brien is worth 10 million quid, what are the rest of them like? Have they got fucking the Brazil 1970 team is fucking in Canal Side, Huddersfield.
Canal Side Kennels.
I've forgotten the name of the river. It's the, what's the river in Huddersfield?
The River Hood.
Down by the River Hood.
Is it the Calder?
Yes, because it's all Calderdale, isn't it? It's all next to the canal anyway, they call it. So what's the canal? It's the canal.
It's the Calder and Hebble navigation by that point, is it?
So that thing. That there's something in the water there that means they're all fucking Ajax 1970 with Lee Bromby's turned into Johan Cruyff. No. So
how much did we pay for Trevor Cherry? Maybe we should cap it at that.
£100,000, I think.
That's what they can have.
Completely reasonable.
And he played for Bradford too, as did there's Lewis O'Brien. Admittedly, he played for Bradford after Leeds, didn't he? But still, I think he's the new Trevor Cherry, this guy, and we should pay £100,000 for him.
Which
and he should play 400 games for Leeds.
Because he sounds like he's too good to play for Huddersfield. And it sounds like he's a pretty good midfielder. So we should definitely buy him.
It's the River Colne, by the way.
The Colne.
And the canal there is the Huddersfield Broad Canal. So we were wrong on both counts, which is great.
Well, whatever.
It's Calderdale, Halifax. I always confuse the two.
I mean, the Calder goes to Wakefield as well. But I don't think that claims to be in Calderdale.
Calderdale is Halifax and out that way. But it isn't.
What's Kirk Lees then?
Is it the River Kirk?
The River
Captain
Lees.
Kirk.
Who knows? Get in touch if you know about rivers.
Starship Enterprise, isn't it? Or the guitarist in Orange Juice. I think I've made my point.
And I think it stands up, so well done, Moscow. Congratulations on that. In the absence of much else to talk about, we should pay tribute to Pablo because his banner has come down at Leeds. We have a new one that's gone up with newer people on it. Melier is on there, isn't he, on that one that's been attached to the he stand on the left-hand side, among others.
I think that's a virtue of him being tall and thin.
Yes.
So he looks good.
He's got the right dimensions for it, hasn't he?
There is a bit of waste here because Castellon have just had a new one produced, haven't they, that they've stuck up on a tower in there. Yeah. Why don't we just send him ours? It would have been fine. They could have just reused it.
Yeah, I feel draw like a different kit on it.
Exactly.
A pen on it.
But he's not even played yet, has he, Pablo?
Has he not?
I don't think so. I think they've had a couple of friendlies and there's been no sign of him. So get him out of there. That's what I say. Free him.
Final point then before we sign off on this one. We need to have a word about Neil Warnock. It's not Leeds United, but the fact that he's wearing a fanny pack like a tourist, pottering around Disney World, but in there, he's not got his passport. He's not got his tickets for the rides, has he? He's not got a bottle of water. He's got in there photos signed of him. And I was going to say that he signed himself. I've got a feeling there's some sort of cottage industry going on. Sharon sat at home scribbling on these photos. And there you go, Neil. There's your bum bag. It's all full of the photos. I've signed them all for you.
That little girl, in fairness, that he handed one to, did bizarrely look pleased.
No.
With it.
No, she was lying. She did the full, it was like getting a card from your granddad and there's some money inside on your birthday and then you open it and it's like a 20 pence piece that's sellotaped inside. And you're like, oh, thanks, Alan. I'll bet. And then granddad might get them. He's like, is that enough? Can you buy a toy with that? No, yeah. I can get something great. I'm so, like, thanks so much.
In the playgrounds of Middlesbrough, I reckon a signed Neil Warnock picture is worth, like, I don't know, some Monster Munch and a dib dab or something.
What the fuck do you do with it?
Currency, that's what it is.
I don't know if I can necessarily put myself into the mindset of a 10-year-old girl, but I can imagine, yes, if it's a picture of BTS, you stick that on your wall and you're happy and that looks down at you as you go to sleep at night and it's the first thing you see when you wake up in the morning. But it's a fucking signed photograph of Neil Warnock on a bedside table. If she, 20 years from now, when she's in therapy, trying to get to the root of all her problems, and then it suddenly she starts
Why am I only attracted to men without eyebrows? I keep picking them. It's so strange.
There'll be something in your childhood.
I'm trying to find what picture it might be.
Just to go back to the whole Huddersfield thing, I do need to apologise to the residents of like Halifax and Elland and Brighouse and stuff, because I always do this, and not, without fail, whenever I say that Huddersfield's in Calderdale, always get tweets saying, it's not, you're a fucking idiot. Calderdale is Halifax. And I would like to just say, for the record, the Calder and Hebble Navigation Canal does run next to the River Calder through Calderdale, which is up Halifax way and not Huddersfield.
Yeah, it's Kirklees. It's yeah. Huddersfield, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So, final point. Adama Traore, £30 million. Do you want him?
Can we do a swap for... No, let's not. Costa's fine, isn't he? We're going to get him, are we?
No, not £30 million. I would be very surprised if Leeds United decided to pony up £30 million for Adama Traore.
Oh, it feels like if we've got that much money to spend, maybe a central midfielder would be a more obvious place to spend it, because I think we're reasonably well covered on the wings for now, aren't we? So, yeah, I can't see it happening. We didn't actually, speaking of covering midfield, we've not even mentioned Adam Forshaw, have we?
No, he's back.
Who is back and playing. He looks fine, doesn't he? I can think of nothing more to say. It looks very much like Adam Forshaw always did, which was kind of a fairly steady presence in midfield. Keeps things ticking over. Whether or not he'll ever be good enough to play for us, who actually knows? Because he's not even played for a first team friendly yet, has he? But it's good to see him playing football again anyway. I think we've all felt quite sorry for him, as much as he's become the unfortunate butt of a lot of jokes. Just the prospect of not playing football for 2 years, which is basically what he's had to do, is can't have been fun for him. So it's good to see he can at least play football again.
It was quite similar to that thing Billy Bremner said about Terry Cooper. Oh, we all start, you know, we're all having a laugh and a joke at first, like, put that leg back together. And then you're like, are you gonna? Is it possible? I think it said a lot that after the Guiseley game, he put the photo of him seeing his son in the crowd at the end of the match and saying that he finally managed to sort of prove to his son, who's not old enough to remember seeing him play a game of football before. Like, Daddy is a footballer, like the ones that you see on TV. That is what Daddy does.
That got me in the feels, that one, a little bit.
So it'll be interesting. I mean, I think he's got 1 year to go on his contract, hasn't he? And I feel like anything Adam Forshaw does now, I don't know. I mean, a moment ago I was trying to think like a 10-year-old girl. Now I'm trying to think like a 30-year-old Scouser. And what does Adam Forshaw want out of his career now to play? And then is he regarding the rest of it like anything after that is a bonus? If he gets into the Premier League, will he be happy? If he does a season in the under-23s, just gets through it without his hip snapping in two, is he going to be happy? So I feel like the conversation around Adam Forshaw for me is kind of, it's kind of in his court, really. Like, what do you want to get out of this season? What's going to be best for you? Because a lot of people are saying, let's ship him out on loan to the Championship and see how he gets on. I don't know if after everything that's going on with COVID and the way it's fucked everything up for so many people, and he's had his fitness in the middle of it all and haven't played for anything, and the way that kind of ostracizes an injured player. So I remember when he did that interview saying that we were going to piss the league, he was also saying, Well, I've not actually seen any of the players in training since they've been back because I have to be in a different area of the training ground at a different time because of COVID protocols. Whether out of all of that, you then want to go play for Bournemouth or something and move everything down there, or if it's just stay in Leeds, stay fit, play football, train with the lads, see how it goes, and hopefully it could be good because he could save us 30 million quid. He's played in the Premier League before at Middlesbrough and he was good for them. I know it's all relative. Adam Clayton played for Middlesbrough in the Premier League, but I wish him well.
Right, well, we'll wrap it up there for this week and we'll return next week due to speak to Angus Kinnear next week, so that should be good. We'll get a handle on where the club is. Is everybody ready for the new season? I hope the
Evans
answer...
Road, LS11 OES.
I hope the answer to that is yes. And we will...
suddenly breaks down crying.
So we've not done anything.
All I've been doing is messing about on my bike.
So we'll see how ready the club is. And I think we should do predictions next week so we can laugh at ourselves come May when we get them all spectacularly wrong.
We're going down. We're going down with a record low points total. I would snap your hand off for 18 points right now.
I think at what point is Wayne Rooney taking over from Marcelo Bielsa?
God, we don't even mention his it wasn't really a statement, was it? His mumbled apology about what he was up to. We'll leave it at what he was up to.
Yeah.
Because
having farts in his face by the looks of it.
Bless him.
So yeah, I'm sure we'll revisit that one as their disastrous season unfolds. Which is cool. And yeah, we'll return next week. We'll see you in a bit.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.